But tonight you have Brad.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Brad Nemenow tonight. Back in December, I come up to see somebody tell their story that I hadn't heard before. And Tim asked me to pick a date. And I'm looking through the calendar, and it's kind of interesting. I'm looking through January, no date. I look through February. As I'm looking through February, and I'm noticing no date, my mind goes, wouldn't it be neat if March the 5th would be available? It's not, so it's March the 3rd. And I get back to the March the 5th, because there's certain times of the year, a couple times of the year, but I look backwards. You know, my sobriety date, which is 7/16 of 81. I look backwards a couple weeks before that. March the 5th is another one of those dates. Just to give you a little bit of background, because I don't want to tell a big, huge junk club, but my father is retired Army, so I spent my youth traveling the country. Went to kindergarten in Okinawa, Japan. And as a result of all this, I ended up moving like 50 times by the time I was 20, and I never fit in. I was constantly bullied, and I hid as a result of that. It was a very difficult time for me, especially with our country as well, because I don't want to get into a whole bunch of it, but we're going through the 60s, JFK's death, Martin Luther King's death, RFK's death, Kent State, all kinds of stuff. The word was just nasty. With my dad being an army, I'm involved with all this. So it was really tough. And of course, when you're going to school and being called son of a baby killer, it didn't make it easy on somebody. And I'm a small guy. I got bullied everywhere I went. So I hid. It's the only thing I knew to do. Hide. My dad, unfortunately, did something, but he had some time very, very fortunately. When he went to Nam, he looked at me in the tarmac and told me I was the man of the house now. Well, that was good in one sense, but in another sense it wasn't, because he didn't realize that what I did is I took that responsibility and put it on my shoulders, and I'm only a 10-year-old kid. And I spent my life with a problem with having this issue of everything's my responsibility, even when it's not. So I'm going through all this, and by the time I found drinking, I found an answer. And that was huge for me. I found an answer, because I hurt. But I couldn't tell anybody either, because I didn't know how to talk. I was too busy hiding from everything, because I was being bullied. Now, I started the drinking in the Navy. And it was kind of interesting. At 17 years old, I got angry with my father. He told me that I wasn't going to lie in his house. And, of course, I told him I wasn't going to be in his house no more. And so I'm just going to tell you a few things that I figured out once I got to this program. Because I didn't get here to get sober later on. I came here to find out if I was an alcoholic. And there are a few things once I got here and cleared up that when I look back were kind of indicators that I belonged here. Within the first 3 months of my drinking, I shot somebody at point blank range with a line across the chest in my grandmother's basement. You know, I guess you shouldn't play Russian roulette and play games with guns when you're drunk. What can I say? Wasn't very long after that I'm a blackout drinker. I'm in Amsterdam, Netherlands on a North Atlantic cruise. I blacked out at come to 4.5 months later in Boston, Massachusetts. I'm just partying, having a good time. Then it wasn't very long after that there was a chase around the state of Georgia. Seems that this guy was passing counterfeit money all around, and the Secret Service was looking for me. What the hell? I didn't take anything out of it. I needed some money. I got some money. Needless to say, I was drinking. I didn't behave very well. I had a good time, though. I was partying. Being arrested by the Secret Service was not fun, but that's what happened. Then, about 2 weeks before I arrived in this program, I ended up in a position where I was a drug dealer. And my brother decided to buy some drugs and then pay for it with a check. Yeah, they didn't go over too well. And as that proceeded to tell him that didn't go over too well, he swung on me. Uh-oh. I snapped. The next thing you know, there's another guy there. The next thing you know, after I was tired from swinging, I asked the guy, why didn't he stop? And he looked at me and he said, I didn't want to die. I put my brother in the hospital, severely beaten. Because once I snapped, I started swinging until I was tired. My mom told me about two days later that she couldn't recognize it. His face was so swollen. Now, I knew that he was going to rap on me. So I decided that I needed to get rid of my product. So I was, the product was the speed. You ever heard of a Black Beauty? I had subscription Black Beauties. And about 200 of them. So in 2 weeks, I started consuming everything possible, and at the same time period, you got to equal that stuff out, so guess what else I'm consuming? A ton of alcohol. Now, mind you, in those days, prior to those days, my habit was, and I know this is AA, but I'm all, drugs out, getting it here, 2 quarts of Corvo a day, an ounce of pot a day. I did over 3,000 hits of acid in 3 years. That doesn't count all the rest of the stuff. Hey, I'm just partying. Well, unbeknownst to me, I was living at Claremont Lodge, which is Claremont 85. I have to create Claremont Lodge, and I would be there in September days. But my ex-wife at the time was working at a restaurant just in front of it, and I would pull into the restaurant on my motorcycle and forget to put my feet down, so I'd take myself up, take the bike back up, and walk in. Well, I didn't realize that there were some people that were talking to her about me. These people seemed to come to this place called Napa. And all of a sudden one evening, she decides to inform me that I'm an alcoholic. Well, I'm just drunk. What do you think I'm going to do? I'd bow that. You don't accuse me of anything. Well, I started to get really angry, and she started to cry, and I was not very good around women that cried. So I decided to leave, and she begged me not to leave. And for a change, I didn't. But I ended up blowing up. I'm not sure how many walls I put my fists, my elbows, my knees, my feet through. I mean, I blew. She's crying. Don't accuse me of this. Well, then I had this really bad idea about how to get this woman to stop crying. I looked at her, if you don't quit crying, I'm going to pick that bottle up and I'm going to throw it in the TV. She threw it, I picked that bottle up and I threw it. That got her to leave. Now, I've heard in the saying there's nothing that you can do that somebody else hasn't done. I happen to have some. I can't be the only person that's ever done this, but I'm the only one I've ever heard of. After she left, the bottle didn't break. That was a good throw. I pulled the bottle out, and I poured myself a drink straight up. And I started drinking it, pacing the floor. What's an alcoholic? Am I an alcoholic? What's an alcoholic? And I started drinking it. And I started doing this to the degree that the thoughts became very obsessive. And it became an emergency. I had to find out. Am I an alcoholic? I did the only thing I needed to do with an emergency. I picked up the phone and I dialed 911 and asked. Now remember, I'm a drug dealer with inventory. No, I had nothing to do with insanity. And they took my phone number. And at United, they called. And United Way, basically told me the same thing over and over and over. I don't know if you are, but I know where you can find out. I don't know where you are, but I know where you can find out. And this is where they said I could find out. And here's the importance of the November, of the March the 5th. That phone call was made exactly 44 years ago tomorrow. My very first meeting was right back there where Dusty is 44 years ago, March the 5th. Now, I got here to find out, am I an alcoholic? I have no clue. What is one? I'm 22 years old. I can hear there's just a bunch of old parts here. We play good. I qualify for that. And I know, I mean, I was still drunk when I got here. And I know there was a lady telling her story, and her name was Mary. And the lady celebrating her birthday's name was Mary. The only reason I remember that is my mother's middle name is Mary. And I walked in. Because it was a birthday meeting, I couldn't get out fast enough. I got surrounded. And of course, I'm trying to disappear. I don't want anybody to know I'm here. You know, I'm used to hiding. And the next thing you know, Mary hands me a piece of cake and asks me to come back. The only reason I know that it was March the 5th is somebody giving a big book with the date in it. I mean, I'm still drunk. I wouldn't have remembered that. But when they asked me to keep coming back, they had something I wanted, and it wasn't sobriety. I saw people smiling. I saw people laughing. I saw people that cared about each other. That's what I wanted. I hadn't had that in so long. I wanted that. So I kept coming back. No one did anything but coming back. Which means eventually I drank. Now, the funny thing is there was a lady here by the name of Marion. And back in those days, on a Sunday night, they would close that curtain back there and have a small group. And this particular Sunday night, the topic was acceptance. And I got called on. And I stood up and said, I am going to accept it. Turned around and walked out. I have no clue to this day what I was talking about. But I wasn't going to accept. I just zoomed and left. And Marion, unfortunately, because her Achilles tendons were severely damaged, she couldn't catch me. And the very next day, somebody did something that had been happening, but it just... I was here, so I stayed sober. Somebody threw me a joint, and next thing you know, boom. Then, at those days, you could not have Coors in Georgia. And this guy had a case of Coors in his truck. And I convinced him, said, listen, if I can cool it down a six-pack, can I have a six-pack? He said, we don't have any ice or anything else. I said, I know. But if we can have a six-pack, can I can get it cold, can we have some? Oh, yeah, sure, you can't do that. So I put it in a small cooler, grabbed a CO2 fire extinguisher. We had cold cars. Only an alcoholic would think of something like that. And I put off and running, I was. Now, I was around here for 4.5 months. I got AA going through my head. Oh, I didn't like that. Now, I left work. I was going to come to a meeting, and I don't remember going in, but I remember standing outside the liquor store with a bottle. Heck with the meeting, I'm going to get drunk, I'm going to waste the bottle. I did that for 3 days, and at the end of those 3 days, I knew that I was an alcoholic. I didn't have to question it. Then it was just a matter of, did I want help? Well, I've lived in Dixie dumpsters before. I've had my food thrown on me from Kentucky Fried Chicken when it was done at night. I didn't want to go back to that. I knew what a living death was. I've listened to it enough in these rooms that I decided I needed help. So I picked up the phone, and I say picked up the phone. I grabbed some change and went to a payphone. And dialed this guy that I had been calling my sponsor. I'd never used him as one, but I called him as one. His name was Jason, the lowest bottom drunk I've ever heard. And asked him for some help, and it was a Thursday. And he said, well, can you go without drinking to get to the men's group that night? Which the men's group here, which in those days was a really tough group. I mean, there was two DeKalb County judges in that meeting. I told him, I don't think he understood. I wanted a drink right then and there. I'm telling this guy that used to He used to sleep in the creek out here. He was bad. People gave up on him. I'm telling this guy that he didn't understand. Then we finally got there. He said, well, can you go a minute without drinking? Well, I'm good. I checked the watch. Watched the watch for an entire minute. I said, okay, I did that. Go what? He said, well, can you do another minute? Well, shoot, I'm really sharp. So I got my watch. No, I'm about to say, hey, yeah, I can do that. Never. Sometimes it's quickly, sometimes slowly. It took me going, at that time period, which was around 11 o'clock in the morning, I went 1 to 5 minutes at a time until I got to that meeting to stay sober. Now, it took a long time for me to understand that is somebody who is willing to go to whatever and do whatever it took. When I get to this meeting, I'll never forget it. God, I remember Bob Logan was sitting right over here. And he always read the book before the meeting. I go to him and said, Bob, I slipped. In those days, relapse was a rehab word. We slipped as drunks. He basically just turned off, looked at oopsies, you jumped, and went right back. And ignored me. What the hell is this? Well, the very next day, and I got through the meeting, picked up a shift. The very next morning, I quit the job. I decided I didn't want to have anything thrown at me anymore for fear that I wouldn't be able to say no. And I used to, typically, if you'll see me in meetings, typically I'm sitting right there in that corner. And the reason for it, there was a man there by the name of Dow, and Dow knew Bill and Bob. And Dow spoke most of the time, we listened. And I went up to Dow before the 11 o'clock meeting and looked at Dow and said, Dow, I slipped. And Dow looked at me and said, slipped is between shit and syphilis and a dictionary and a woman's undergarment and you jumped. I kind of stood there going, who the hell do you think you are? Stayed for the meeting, left the meeting kind of irritated. Well, that's a minor word. I was mad. About 3 days later, I went back to Dow and said, thank you. Because that little bitty violin that I was trying to play, poor me, poor me, poor me, he didn't play it. He told me the truth. I'm responsible for my decision on whether or not I drink once I get sober. Mm-hmm. That's kind of interesting. The last time I saw Dow was at Chastain Park. I'd gone to a concert because I was working 80, 90 hours a week, gone to a concert. The first time I've only seen him outside of the concert. So I'm with this lady that I knew the name, but it just didn't ring. Then all of a sudden when she started singing Misty, I knew who Sarah Vaughan was. It's like, oh my goodness. But I ended up coming around and coming around and coming around and coming around. I wanted to get sober. And I ended up with a couple of things that I thought was really interesting. I didn't understand powerlessness. I knew once I started drinking, I had no choice. I had to keep drinking. But intellectually, up in my head, what do you mean powerless? I have power. What do you mean? And the guy that I had as a sponsor at the time, Jason, looked at me and said, okay, why don't you go talk not Dal, trying to think of his name right offhand, Diz. His name was Diz. If you've ever been downstairs and you see a frying pan up on the wall, that's more than Diz, bro. Why don't you go talk to Diz? So I did. And Diz, after our talk, asked me if I would, that night, get on my knees and do the third step work. I said, okay, I'll do that. Knowing damn well I wasn't going to do that. Because I didn't get on my knees for nobody. Nobody. Well, that night I get home, and of course I'm alone, and I lay down, and for the first time in a long time period, I couldn't go to sleep. I had this nagging thing that I had told somebody I would do something, and I wasn't going to do it, and I lied to them. Oh my goodness, my conscience had woken up. So I ended up getting up and doing just that. Got out in my living room, grabbed the big book, found where the third step was, got on my knees, did the third step for her. Oh, goodness. Did not like it, but I did it. Then I went to bed. And for the first time in I don't know how long that I could remember, I laid there with no thoughts nagging me. I laid there at peace with no nagging thoughts going through one ear to the other ear. And I'm not sure how long I laid there, but finally a thought came, and that thought was, what next? I decided to get up after a while, because what next wouldn't leave me alone. And I don't know where to look, and I don't know where to find the what next answer. So I started going through the book. Maybe I could find the answer in the book. Have you ever laid a book down and it just opens it? Well, that book happened. I laid the book down, back to tired, looking for the answer. Pages unfolded, and I looked down, and oh my goodness, what's the first sentence I see? Faith without works is dead. Well, that's what's next. Now, for a long time during those days, I had an issue with faith because I put faith with religion. And me and religion did not get along. But I had faith in the people in these rooms. And I had faith that the alcohol was my answer. So after talking with the sponsors for a while, what we figured out is it's not that I didn't have a lack of faith, it's that I needed to change what I had my faith in. At the same time period, there was this other thing about how you have to surrender. Well, I'm from a military family. We don't surrender. I remember Hamburger Hill. I've seen all these guys returning from Nam with no legs, etc. No, we don't surrender. So I had an issue with that. Well, I found an answer with that for me. I didn't surrender. What I did was I changed my allegiance. Instead of my allegiance being to the Bible, my allegiance was to this program. And it worked. And it worked for me. Then I ended up, after a while, asking the guy if I could have two, asking my sponsor if I could have two sponsors, because Jason was a very good 1-2-3 sponsor. He knew 1-2-3. But I had all this junk inside here that I needed to try to figure out what was going on. And I went to this guy, and his name was Bill. So I asked this guy, I had 9 months sober, his name was Bill Owen, if he would be my sponsor. And Bill said, yeah, he would. And I had two sponsors. As long as I didn't work one against the other. And that's the big thing. I can't work one against the other. I had Jason to keep me 1-2-3 simple. And I had Bill to help me get inside this gut of mine. So I could now see feelings and what it meant. Now, I was not one of these and wanted to postpone things. So, I got into the fourth or fifth step fairly quick because I wanted to get fixed. I was so broken, I wanted to get fixed, so I jumped in. Now, I was such a blackout drinker that it wasn't that tough for me. I didn't remember a lot of it. Well, bits and pieces, and that's about it. Well, once I did my fifth step with Bill, there was that one thing that I wasn't going to tell him. I had that one deep down secret that I wasn't going to tell anybody. Nobody's going to know it. And then somewhere in the process of that fifth step, I let it out. And when I did that, there was a freedom that came about that was unlike anything I'd experienced. And Bill just looked at me and goes, yeah, understand I've heard of that before. Huh? I've heard about it before. It's okay. How do we get through it? Okay. Well, I didn't get judged. That made a world of difference to me. A world of difference. Well, after that, in 4, 6, and 7, very short in the book. Very major part of my life today, but very short in the book. Then 8, 9. Now, the eighth step was really interesting for me, because remember with the blackout, with all the blackouts, I couldn't remember very much. The next step, I did the ninth step a little differently than I had heard a lot of people do it at that time period. I had said, I'm sorry so much that I refused to use the words, I'm sorry. I used the words, I was wrong. That was not an easy thing to do. To look at somebody and go, I was wrong. Ooh. But the result of it was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Well, after that, then of course we get another thing. Now, of course, I've got a couple of years sober by this time. Now what? Because here's the interesting thing about this. The worst mistakes I've made in my life have been sober. I was 22 when I got here. I was a kid. I didn't know how to live. I had to learn how to live. How did I learn? By making mistakes. You know, one of the things that I like to say that I don't hear too many people saying is, you know, there's this old joke, how do you become an Alzheimer's? You don't drink and you don't die. Well, there's another piece to it. That you learn how to live with the wreckage of your sobriety. Because I've had some big, big mistakes. Now, I've also had some really good things happen. I mean, I remember I helped create the City of North Carolina's computer department, my first computer job. And I worked really tough to get that, worked really hard to get that, and then found out that I was not the kind of person that wanted to have the newspaper and the TV station's microphones in my face. So I got out of that quick. That was not where I wanted to belong. And I understood a few things about politics being involved with that, and not for me. So I left. Then I started getting with other jobs and started traveling the country. And that was, you know, nothing like being by yourself in the middle of Montana, 30 degrees below zero, in a town that's got 1,000 people, and there's no AA meeting. And there's no cell phones. They didn't exist. And because I had a phone, guess what I didn't bring? I didn't bring the book with me. So I had to learn how do I stay sober. Well, what I did is I don't pray as much as some people say. I meditate. And I meditate looking for answers. In prayer, I ask. But with meditation, I listen for answers. And that's what I did. I learned how to meditate. That's one of the beautiful things with it is by learning how to do that, I've learned how to get out of my own way. Wow. Now, there's a couple of gifts in the program that have happened to me with ninth steps that I thought was good, that I'd share that's kind of neat. I've been married three times, but back in my second marriage, who happened to be in the program, I used to go to the Atlanta Roundup. And on our fifth wedding anniversary, I see my first wife at the Roundup. Oops. And after the meeting, I'm at the coffee area outside in the hallway. The wife looks at me and says, why don't you go and see if you can't make amends? Because she knew that I had not had the opportunity to make amends. So here it is. I've got a wife that's offering me on our fifth wedding anniversary as my wedding gift. To do amends with my first wife. Say what? Now, mind you, I understand. I walk up to her when she's pouring a cup of coffee and say, can I have a minute of your time? And her response was, a minute. You don't understand that. The next thing you know, though, I've got her sitting here, the wife sitting here, and the two of them are talking about me as though I wasn't sitting there. After a while, I looked at the first one and said, do you mind if we could go to a restaurant? She said, this one of those nice step things? I said, yeah. She said, okay. So we did. We went to a Denny's and I did my ninth step with her. Now, we're at the Roundup, we've got a room, the wife and the sister. Next morning, they do their baths and do their shower and all that kind of stuff, and I'm the guy waiting. So at the end, when I get ready, I go to the hospitality suite, and there is my sister, my first wife, my wife, and they're all everybody talking to each other. I'm standing there going, uh-oh, I'm uncomfortable. And the first wife gets up and starts walking towards me, and she said, let's go outside. And the wife goes, go, go, go. So I went outside. And when I get out there, and we sit down, and she looks at me and says, I've been up all night, I haven't slept. You're an asshole. I'm like, oh, goodness, I'm sorry. I thought I did my next step properly. And she said, no, you don't understand. You did. It's my turn. Where can you go to get that kind of thing? And then next thing you know, she did. She did her next step. And I was absolutely floored. I actually did something right for a change. And I did. I said I was wrong. Now, mind you, when I said I was wrong with all of that, I never once brought about any part from her. It's all my part. So it wasn't, hey, you did this and I did that. Uh-uh. It's only what I did. Thought that was really neat. Now, the next nice step that was really something else was not direct. That mistake was so severe that I, to this day, cannot make a direct amend. Sober. I paid a big price for that one. Put my entire life up in the airport to make that amend. And still to this day making the amend. Now here's the real beautiful part of that. Doing all that I have done through the decades of that amend, about 2-3 years ago, somebody that comes here put something on Facebook, and I decided to respond to it. And when I responded to it, the next thing you know, that person that I had harmed felt safe enough to respond in such a way where I knew that I was the point. But I had made the amend enough to where that person finally felt safe enough to do that. Wow. That was huge. Very, very, very huge to me. Now, the other nice step that I'll mention is something that I never expected. You see, on that original 8-step list, there was one person I couldn't find. Now I've got a sponsee, and I want the sponsee, and we're going to work these steps, so don't you need. I need to keep looking for this person. And I did. I kept looking and looking and looking when I wasn't in a relationship, because this person was a woman and I didn't want the current relationship to have an issue with me wanting to make amends to a woman, especially a long time ago, especially for somebody that I wanted to have a relationship with. Well, on June the 5th, each year, when I'm not in a relationship, because that was her birthday, I would think for her. Well, for years, where do you go? I mean, I was in the Navy. It was Jacksonville. I mean, things changed. If she got married, I wouldn't know. Now, being in the computer business, there were time periods where I had the ability to look in places that you really don't have much access to look. And I did. But I never could find them. Until about 3 years ago. Well, actually, 2 years ago. 2 years ago, on June the 5th, I found her sister's obituary. Now, mind you, how do I know it's her sister? It's kind of funny. How many Nancy Carvins do you know that live in Mary Island, Florida, that's a dwarf? Nancy. So I knew I finally found her. And within that, I found some names. And within that, the next thing you know, I thought, oh my goodness, I've got this list of people, I think it is, and I called somebody that's a very dear friend of mine out in Reno. And she's about to celebrate 40 years next Monday. I was telling Beth about all this, and she said, what's her name? And the next thing you know, now, Beth's an attorney. So next thing you know, I get this email, and I got a background check with email addresses and phone numbers. Put together a plan on how I was going to do all this, and I email, and they all bounced back almost within 5 minutes. So the emails were gone. So then I put together a text with all the phone numbers that I had, and I texted it. Nothing. So I decided to leave it alone for a while. And about a month and a half later, I decided, let's take a chance. There's one place here that looks like it might be a place that she worked. So I called the phone number. Somebody answered the phone. I was telling this guy, I've been looking for her for 40 years. If you know her, if you da-da-da, says, can you give her my phone number and his call? Well, I knew with the way he was taking the information, because I've taken it that way, that I found the right number. Now I'm pacing after him and I hang up, because what am I going to do? Holy Mary, I didn't expect to ever find her. I've given up. I was just doing what I was telling her five years to do. Keep looking. And then the phone rang. It's just the Brad I think it is. I'm like, well, what Brad do you think it is? And she laughed and said a few things. And I had made the decision to bring about a particular event to where only her and I would know, so she would know that it truly was me. So I said, remember that birthday party to where I was sitting next to your stepdad, you were sitting next to your mom, and at the end of the luncheon, your dad looked at you and said, listen, for the final gift, I would like for you to move that plant from the front to the back, because we both know what that plant is. She said, Dad! Well, after talking for a little bit, I asked her, she was about to move from Tennessee to Virginia, and I asked her if I could drive up and spend an hour and talk to her person-to-person, face-to-face. And she said, you're going to drive 4 hours to talk to me for an hour? Yeah. Okay, I did. It was as though 40 years had not passed. It was a 2 minute long hug. It's like, holy moly. Then we went to sit down at the restaurant and I explained to her what it was all about. She kind of laughed and went, yeah, I know a bit about AA. And then when I made the amends, she kind of looked at me and said, I don't remember that. You don't have to carry it anymore. That's what happened. I hadn't been carrying it. I just was trying to do it and explained it all to her. And it's kind of interesting. To this day, her and I talk on the phone all the time. And it's kind of funny. And this is really funny because you're looking at, did you ever just, after about 6 months, she was like, Brad, did it ever occur to you after all this time if I wasn't in a relationship and you weren't in a relationship that we might be able to get together? She said, yeah, she must have really blown your mind when you figured out I was a lesbian. And my response was, it doesn't change anything. Who you are is who you are. All right, so here we are. We're really, really, really close friends today. It's really neat. So I've now, you know, it took 40-some years, but I've now completed my full 9-step list. But that's the whole neat part about it is, guess what? I didn't say enough. I had people tell me, you've tried long enough, just walk away from it. Mm-mm. I hadn't completed it. One of the other things that's kind of interesting that I've done is that if somebody asks me to do something in the program, I don't say no. Unless I have a previous engagement. To this day, I have not broken that. That's almost 44 years. I won't do it. I still remember where I came from, and I don't want to go back there. It's interesting how I was talking to somebody on the way here. Gave me a call. I can look back and I can see that individual and that person I was. But you know, I don't know that person anymore because he doesn't exist. I remember him. I can remember a lot of things about him I didn't like. And which gets me to something else that I do that I think is really important. I had somebody do something with me early in the program and I decided that it was a good thing to do. I try to give newcomers a challenge, and it's not an easy challenge, and I give all of you the same challenge. At least once a day, go look yourself in the mirror, and as you're looking yourself in the mirror, give yourself a hug. Oh, it gets even better. And as you're giving yourself a hug, say, I love you. Oh, the tough part is, mean it. Try that 30 days. I did. Because I didn't like that person in the mirror. I just liked him with a passion. And there was also a saying that used to bother me when early in the program. Our best thinking got me here. I disliked that. here it is, I'm looking at that dirt, and he's thinking, oh, today, it's my best thinking that keeps me here. Having some compassion for that person, look in the mirror. There's my two favorite sentences in the big book. I always did the faith without works. The other one is love and tolerance of others is our code. That particular sentence changed my life when I realized I'm one of the others. How do I want to be treated? I want to be treated the same way I treat you. Ooh. It goes both ways. So I've got to walk that walk. I've got to treat you the way I want to be treated. The other thing that used to bother me, and I heard it a lot around here, judgment's wrong. I'm going to disagree with that. I don't think judgment's wrong. If I don't make a judgment, how am I going to pick a sponsor? How am I going to pick a friend? I'm going to pick somebody I want to date if I don't make a judgment. It's the motive behind the judgment and what I do with the judgment that I've got to be careful of. Key word, motive. It's part of what 6 and 7 is all about for me. Is I look at, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? What's the reason for doing it? Yeah, I do my best not to ask the question why, because that was like a dog. I ended up chasing his tail with why. I didn't get nowhere. Joe actually answered my question of why one day when he looked at me and says, why not? I didn't like that answer. But we've got an answer. Mm-hmm. I'm going to close it up with something that I think is important for me. And I say this for me. And every time I pick up a chip, I try to say this. When I use the most difficult four-letter word in my vocabulary, mm-hmm. the most difficult one, and I use it honestly and with integrity and with follow-up, things happen. And the word doesn't start with a D, it doesn't start with an F or an S. The words help. And even with 44 years, guess what? Help is appropriate. I say 44, 43. I still ask for help. And I had somebody tell me that they would describe me with one word. And when they told me that this is somebody that had time in the program when I got here, that I knew. And when she told me that she would describe me with one word and that particular word, I sat down and she didn't realize that it brought tears. Because this is not who I was when I got here. And the word that she used was integrity. Because if I say I'm going to do something, it's my bond, I'm going to do it. And that wasn't who I was when I got here. And I'm not special. I'm just a garden variety drunk who's willing to do whatever it takes to stay sober. And I hope you too. Thank you.
For 40 years, Cinnamon, really puts in the sometimes scary part. Thank you, Brad.
First I slip, and then I crib to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Looking to love's window for all. Take me where